Hi, welcome to the Brown and Happy podcast. In our time together, I will share what it means to be brown and happy. For many of us, everything looks good on paper, but we're still not happy and living fulfilled lives. It's time to change this, and I can help. I'm your host, Dr. Payal Patel Gayal. Hello, everyone. I have a lovely guest today. I know, right? We've been having so many fun guests who know so many amazing things, and they're so inspiring. Today, my good friend Angela is a school principal formerly, and now she coaches leaders. And I'm going to let her introduce that and explain that much better than I can. So Angela, tell me all about you.
Thank you, Payal. I am so happy to be here with you and your audience today. For those of you who are new to me, my name is Angela Kelly Robeck. I'm a former teacher, principal, district leader, turned life and leadership coach for school leaders. So what I do is I help site and district leaders navigate the mental and emotional demands of school leadership. And I've been doing this for about the past 7 years. And really, my business exploded during COVID when we had to pivot, when we had to work from home, go hybrid, and we had to learn how to lead individuals from a distance. So we have been working on that, and then bringing kids back to school has been a whole nother journey. And I just delight in empowering school leaders. So I have a podcast called the Empowered Principal Podcast, and I deeply believe my mission in life is to empower as many school leaders as possible and to empower aspiring leaders to come into these positions and change the way that we approach school leadership.
That's so fun. And you said back to school, and I was like, yeah, that's right. Back to school has been rough for so many people, and I never think about it for what it's like for the teachers, the leaders, like in the school, because I'm just in mommy anxiety mode. Usually it's like, what do we need? Yes. Like, and to be honest, like I struggle more with like the social stuff. Right. And so not for me, but from one of my kids, like each child is so different. And I'm so amazed with the amount of work that goes into understanding and seeing each child as an individual. So thank you for all the work.
Welcome.
It's almost like, I feel like, thank you for your service. I always want to say this because it's, and even during COVID, I was like, I could never do this if I had to, because it's not for me. It requires patience, perseverance. And also, I think it's fun because I do have those things for other parts. Like, you know, I kind of went to medical school.
Yeah,
and
you kind of did a thing.
I kind of did a thing.
Yeah.
I kind of did a fellowship, you know, yeah. And I kind of like started this business. Tell me what got you into doing this work. Like, what was the before and what does the after look like?
Oh, wow. So the 5-second version of this was that I was not a great school leader. I really struggled. I went from being a great teacher, a great instructional coach, and got tapped on the shoulder. And they said, you're such a great teacher leader. We want you to get your admin credential and be a leader. And so I took my marching orders. I went through the admin program, got certified. I got hired the very next year as a brand new principal at a brand new school. So I was not just a new leader. I was opening an entire new school with really very little direction, construction going on. It was a brand new school site. I was a mess. I was a single mom at the time, trying to raise a middle schooler on my own, trying to open a brand new school on my own while being a brand new leader. And life just felt like it was falling apart. And I struggled and struggled emotionally, mentally, physically. I did have a coach. Her name is Fran. I always shout out to her. She was amazing. And she really was my lifeline. I would have quit for sure. But over the course of time, I felt like, I think many of your leaders and audience feels, Payal, where they have the job, they've got the title, they've worked their way up, they're getting the paycheck. Like, I was so proud of myself for making over 6 figures as a woman. Mm-hmm. And I felt so lost, so empty, so deflated, overwhelmed, exhausted. I had it on the outside, but I didn't have it on the inside. And I did not know how to fulfill that part of me without thinking that I had to fill everybody else up around me. For me to be successful, my teachers had to be happy. My secretary had to be happy. Student body, parent body, community, my district, like people pleasing, codependency 101.
Yeah.
And like externalizing my own emotions to other people, totally unaware. And then there was a catalytic event in my family that made me stop and say, no, I cannot go through life on like autopilot and kind of this empty numbness that just like robotic getting up, going through the motions of my life and my day. I was just like, there was a scream inside of me that said no. Mm-hmm. And I started researching. I found a life coach. I was like, I don't know what a life coach is, but my life's a mess. So clearly I need one. I hired Dr. Martha Beck. I got certified with Martha Beck back in 2012. And then I just kept on the life coach train, like following kind of out in the outskirts. Mm-hmm. And then I found Brooke Castillo in 2015. She was offering the life coach school, getting certified as a life coach. And I was like, that would be cool. But I wasn't going to get certified to be a business owner. I was going to get certified to bring the tools into my school. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I got certified in the spring of 2015. I was a school principal for 2 more years. Then I got, you know, up into the district. I was promoted into the district office for a year. And that is when I saw it. My job at the district office was to go to all the schools and work with my peers, my principal colleagues, and help them set up RTI programs, which is response to intervention. And they'd close their door and they would start to cry and just like tell me all the things, nothing to do with intervention. And I was like, holy cow, we've all been sitting in our offices, suffering in silence, crying, but then coming out with a smile on our face and shoulders back. We love our jobs, right? And that's when it hit me. And all year I was going around school after school after school. And I thought there's something missing here and we need to figure this out. And so I started teaching them my coaching tools. And then my one-on-one life coach said, I think you're onto something here. You have a bigger calling. Are you courageous enough to take the leap?
Right.
And I did it. I was scared to death, but I did.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, yeah. You did.
I did the thing.
You did. So Angela is very humble and she is not actually sharing how amazing she is. She's like, I fell in love with her as soon as I met her. We have a lot of fun stories to tell, but I want to go back to this whole leadership thing. She is talking to you guys about like how it is to be a leader in education and everything that you said, Angela, we could replace a profession and it's the same story.
Yes.
For so many women, right?
I agree.
And maybe men, but we're here talking about women, right? So for so many women, right? Like,
yes.
I want to say that I felt that way in medicine. You know, I know people who felt that way in finance and tech, you know, all these different careers in business where mm-hmm. you're just giving all the time. And you're making sure everyone else is okay. And we never stop to think like at what cost.
Yes.
Right. At what cost? And I want to say even as like a mom, right? Like,
oh, for sure.
Right. Like, and this is something, you know, I didn't know this before when my kids were younger, but like you said, like sometimes you need a catalyst, right? And for me, my catalyst was not burnout at work. My catalyst was burnout in my personal relationships. Mm-hmm. And as soon as that happened, I was now able to look at my life kind of from like a third party, like from above. And she's nodding her head because I think we've all had this moment.
Yes. So, yes.
And I think my clients will be nodding their head and her clients will be nodding their head right now too, because we've all had these moments yes. where we're like, wait, we can't keep going like this because it's not sustainable. Right?
No, it's not. And there is nothing left to give. There is literally nothing left to give. And yet still, we still think we haven't done enough. And that's when I realized, at what point is enough enough? It, mm-hmm. like you get to, you catch on to yourself.
Yeah.
The more you give, the more you feel you need to give. The more you actually tell people, yeah, I'll just keep giving. Come and ask me for more. That's why we create this codependent relationship with our staff. We need them to need us for us to feel good about ourselves. And then there's just like an empty hole in the bucket.
And also the more we give, the more people expect.
Of course, we train them to expect.
Right? So I have, when I was, actually yesterday was a big coaching day. And one of the themes was like, I can't change what I'm doing because people are expecting me to do what I've always done. And it's not going to work out. Like our relationship won't work out. This career won't work out if I don't keep giving what I said I would be giving before or continue to give. And they only think this because you told them that this is okay.
Right. And I think one of the hardest questions we have to ask ourselves as leaders, if there is something bothering you, bugging you, like whatever interruptions or the way people are treating you or the way that what they're expecting of you is, why am I allowing this?
Mm-hmm.
And like, when you ask yourself that, you want to do it with a gentle heart because you're not intentionally allowing people to walk over you. You don't want to like flip around and then be angry and resentful, which is what we do when we're in reaction to those emotions. We want to understand, no, there is a reason why we're allowing this. And most often it comes down to like, well, we were told that this is how we should be. And ladies should be kind and humble and giving and people pleasers. There's a belief system driving those actions and feelings. And we just want to like explore that internally and say, why are we allowing this? Like, why are we not? And how do I want to be treated? And what would that look like if I were showing up as the leader who like taught people how to interact with me in a way that felt good for me and for them?
Yeah. So there's two things that came up for me when you were saying that. One is, a lot of like the women that I come across and my own journey, a lot of it has to do with like, well, if I'm the common denominator in this, of course, I come from a science background. I'm the common denominator in all these situations. What is it about me that I'm allowing this? And one of the things that is so subconscious is culture.
Yes.
Family and conditioning.
Yes.
Right. And you could be from any kind of family. Like I know, like I mostly coach women of color and brown women, but I've had women come to me and they're like, you know, Greek or they're Italian. And they're like, dude, in my house, it was the same way. You know, like the girls did this, the boys did that. Right.
Yes.
And I think that we don't know that this is what's going on. It's until we look at it from the outside lens. And that's where like coaches come in very handy. Cause I never knew my own conditioning until my coach pointed it out to me and saying, huh, but why do you think that you have to do that? And I'm like, I don't know. Everyone's always done it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Your folks do the same thing too.
Yeah. You don't know what you don't know. And that's the beauty of coaching. I feel like the before and after with coaching, like, the biggest gift has just been awareness.
Mm-hmm.
It creates awareness. It separates you from your thoughts. It separates you from those belief systems, whether they were from your family or from society or your church or anything, what place of worship. We have all of these belief systems that have kind of been, we were like a blank slate and we had operating systems put into our brains, but we've never updated them. We've never upgraded them. And so we just have to go in and say like, why is it short circuiting? Oh, I have an old operating system. From an old belief system. Yeah. That is, women do the dishes and men sit around and drink whiskey or I don't know, whatever men do, but right. Yeah. But you know, in our families and traditions, and they can be from any family, any culture, but there are belief systems instilled. And I think particularly for women leaders, and this is one of the reasons I reached out to speak with you, is that women leaders and women leaders of color, tend to feel less heard, mm-hmm. less seen, and less taken seriously as a leader. And that's one of the, your strengths that I wanted to bring. I know we're doing this podcast for your audience and for mine because yes. they overlap so much, but one of your brilliance, like the brilliance I want you to share with my leaders is, what is your thoughts on people who are leaders, women leaders of color, who don't feel that they're taken as seriously or on the same playing field as their fellow leaders, as their peers?
Yeah, I think this was probably one of the reasons that I wanted to, what did you say, upgrade my operating system? Yeah. I love that. That was so good. The way I describe it is like you have this like awakening that happens, right? And this is kind of my way. But for me, like, actually, this is, I don't know if I ever told you this, but like in medicine, so I'm a pediatrician and I did general mm-hmm. pediatrics for like 15 years, but I worked for different people. And in between, I took a break to be on maternity leave. And then like we were moving and I really was the only caretaker for my kids. And so I decided, God forbid, I want to breastfeed. You know, like as a pediatrician, yeah. I want to breastfeed. Yes. And so I took this time off. It was very rough. You know, my previous boss didn't like that. I didn't want to come back right away and, you know, things like that. So it became a 2-year mm-hmm. leave. I had two different kids. I had both my kids and breastfed them. So when I started, I applied for a new job at a big corporation. The leadership was white. But the department's mostly women, right? And mm-hmm. I interviewed for this job and 4 months crickets. I don't hear anything
wow.
back.
Wow.
In the meantime, my husband interviews and gets a job within 72 hours.
Whoa.
Right. So he's a specialist, you know, whatever. Right. So people, yeah. there's a story about pediatricians being dime a dozen, whatever. So looking back on it, like this is what I got informally was, well, why did you just go back to work?
Mm.
Why don't you just have your mom watch your kids like mine did?
Mm.
Oh, you don't really need it because you have your husband is making money, right? And mm-hmm. in that moment, like, I don't know if this was me or this was just me being a woman of color, I like shut down.
Mm.
And they're like, yeah. what we're going to offer you is like a, and I'll say it to your audience, like kind of like a substitute teacher, but like yeah. we call it per diem.
Yep.
This is what we're going to give you. Right. And as a physician, I was given $100 an hour to see. Yeah. 100%.
What?
Like $100. Yeah. That's
actually, I could go teach for that.
Yeah. I know. The nurses were like, doc, dude, like you are an amazing doctor. You see 4 or 5 patients an hour. You cannot be making what we make. This is like ridiculous.
Yeah.
And after like a couple of years, right. And so I asked, like, you know, I do a great job. Like everyone loves me. I'd like to have a raise. And they're like, nope, this is what we give. This is standard. This is how it's going to be. So part of me is like still leadership. I felt like was, yes, they were women, but they didn't understand my culture. You know, like part of it was, you know, yes. Did I have to do the things I did? No, but I struggled because what I saw was a lot of pressure to do the things right as a mom. Too, and yes. to give women grace because of their varied background, I think is not even a thing. Like until maybe now we're getting a little bit more open with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, fine, I got to change something about me. And that's when I did a fellowship in integrative medicine, but it was not really with the intention of like, oh, let me find a new passion. Even if I love it now, it was like, let me say, screw you guys. Right. As a woman of color, though, like Angela, what I want to say is like, looking back on it, I could have fought in that moment.
Mm.
Right. And I didn't. Right.
Because
I felt like no one's going to listen.
Mm.
I would be perceived as the pushy.
Yes.
Like, you know, forceful, aggressive. Alpha. I had this whole podcast episode about alpha women.
Yes.
And I'm not naturally like that. And you know me, you know?
Yes.
But she was actually, they were actually more aggressive than I was, but because I was at that mercy. So I felt like I was stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is like an example of like what happened in my career, which I'm so grateful that all that stuff happened, because I would have never found my integrative pediatric practice, which I love, and also my coaching business. And so, you know, going back to how did it feel to be a woman of color? When I started in the coaching space, barely anyone looked like me. I don't even remember. No one in the leadership looked like me. Right. So like all our coaches, like Angela knows all my coaches and everyone's white. So yes. I was like, I was constantly getting coached, but I couldn't explain like my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that there's people who want to know, and you know, you can tell me, so people who want to know and who want to understand like, hey, like, where is this coming from? And also, I can't get it because I haven't been in that situation, right? And it was actually our coach, Brooke, who I was very good at raising my hand and getting coached. And Angela knows this because
my thing is, it's
like, what's the worst that could happen? Like, I've already hit rock bottom. And my coach, she was the one who was like in front of, I don't know, there's probably like tens of thousands of people on this call. And she's like, Pyle, who better to coach women of color than you? And it's interesting that I kind of needed her validation as a, you know, like white woman to be like, oh, this is what I need to do. And over time, I have found my voice.
Yes.
So much so. And Angela knows that like I was on stage as the first Asian woman to speak on a stage with 2,500 life coaches, you know, and guys, it was scary. And I probably talked to you guys about this before, but guess what? Everyone listened, right? And that happened because of me. That happened because of what I did. I want to say thank you to my coaches, but also like thank you to me for showing up and like doing this. And so this to your audience, Angela, I want to say like when we stay quiet, we're never going to get heard. Of course, we're not going to get heard. And people don't even know we have a voice. So it's our job to seek help, our job to build the community and support to be able to find our voice.
And what was the thought shift that gave you the courage to speak up and to be seen and to be heard? What was the can you identify that?
Yeah. So what comes to mind is like, I think it's a very simple one, but it's like, it's my turn now.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, what's so funny. We're totally going up. I mean, not that we had a script to begin with, but I have been getting coached on that same thought. It's my turn now. Mm-hmm. And I think it is such an empowering thought because women, and I'm imagining I'm not a woman of color, but I have many friends who share their stories with me. Women of color who are leaders, we don't feel like it's our turn. We always feel like it's our staff's turn, the student's turn. It's our job to please our district and our officials and the school boards and the state with our test scores, and round we go. But we never think it's our turn. Because as a leader, you're told leaders eat last. I think there's a book out there, Leaders Eat Last. Nothing wrong with that. But when do we eat?
Yeah, but if leaders eat last, then you don't have the energy to do the work. So it's kind of like, you know, when you go on an airplane and they're like, put the oxygen mask on yourself first before you put it on, you know, your child, right? Like, I really have been working on that, you know, taking care of me. And so that's why, funny story, guys, I invited myself to a trip that Angela was going on to Miami.
That was so funny.
And this was the same time that I did the talk in front of the 2,500 life coaches. It was at like our mastermind that we get together, and she and two of our other friends, well, actually the three of them were friends. I kind of was not their friend at that point.
You were just new to the group.
Yeah. I was an acquaintance, and I went up to them, to the three white ladies who I love and adore, but they didn't know that. And I was like, they're talking about like, oh, we're going to go to Miami before we go to some other event with our business coach. And I was like, can I come? And they're like,
and what was the answer?
Yeah.
And sure. We had the best time.
But it's like, and I think like our friend Olivia, and we'll give her a shout out.
Yes.
She said to me, she's like, Pyle, I invited a lot of people, women of color, like all kinds of coaches, right? You invited yourself and you didn't make any excuses.
Yes.
And this was an add-on, right? So I was already going to be away for, I think it was six days or something.
We were gosh, that's right. You had a wedding or something, right?
No, it was just,
you were traveling.
No, afterwards. Okay. I was going to a bridal shower. Oh yeah. I was gone for like 10 days for my kids. And this is the first time I've done this and it's been so long, but I showed the people around me that I need to put my oxygen mask on first, that I need to feed myself, my soul first. And that trip was so amazing for me because one, I advocated for myself and I allowed to receive all the love and support from these women. And honestly, like, this is what I want to tell of you guys. Like, what's the worst that can happen? They could have just said, no, we're not interested in traveling with you. Okay, fine. I would have felt upset. Be like, okay, I guess it's because, you know, they don't like me, or, you know, you could have this opportunity. So like, this is for everybody. I don't even care what you guys do for a living. Like, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the thing. What's interesting is when you're thinking they're going to reject me or they're not going to invite me, you either don't ask or you ask, but you ask in a way that feels super awkward, but you didn't think that at all. You thought these guys are fun. I want to be a part of the fun. I'm an equal coach here. Like I want to be a peer in this group. And we received that. And this is what I'm trying to say is like, we had zero intentions of leaving anybody out, regardless of who they were, the color of their skin. We were like, the more the merrier, but we found it fascinating that only three of us were going. And then you just were like, I want to go. And we're like, yes, these are the kind of people we want. We want to hang out with yes people. And you know who ended up showing up? Maggie.
Yeah, that's true too. I think that some of the people who like maybe wanted to come and didn't come, the reasons they gave, this is what Olivia was saying, was because, my children, I can't be away so long. Yeah. And I have kids the same age or whatever, right? And I think this was kind of fun for her and everyone else to see that I made it work.
Yes.
And not necessarily only made it work. Like, I excelled at it because I came back so refreshed. I was so giving before. And this is something I want to say to all of you mamas, right? Like, it's not selfish. It's actually the opposite. If you love on yourself, that's the only way you can love on other people. As a leader, if you love on yourself, that's the only way you can love on everyone who works with you, around you, for you. Like, exactly. I don't see any other way. And as a coach, Angela, like the two of us, like if we don't get coached, we don't love on ourselves, then like, how can we be good coaches? And our other friend we travel with, Charlotte, she's my coach right now for like in our business group and our small group. And she has taught me about self-love practice. And so just a shout out to Charlotte that yesterday I did my 5-minute like self-love meditation. I did like a 20-minute like bar in the morning. And everything has changed for me now that I understand me first in a good way.
Yes. Okay. Here's the ringer question. When you you've been taking care of yourself first, talk about the mom guilt and talk about the positive impact on your children because you do this, right? Because I think a lot of there's a lot of leaders who are also mothers and they feel guilty because they think they're overworking and they're ignoring their children and their children are going to be scarred for life. Mm-hmm. If heaven forbid they went out after work to go to the gym or to catch a friend with, you know, coffee with a friend, they feel like I've already been gone, you know, 10 hours, another hour is just too much. But what is the net positive gain? Not just for you. Like, yes, it fills you up and that's amazing. We want to focus on ourselves, but what's the net positive for the kids?
So I want to say that I'm going to talk about gender. So I'm a boy mom.
Okay. Right?
And being a boy mom, I want my boys to see women in a role that's outside of a nurturer and caretaker.
Yes.
Right. And I tell them all the time, like, I was a doctor before your dad was a doctor.
Yeah.
Right. Like I tell them all the time, like he was still in training and mom was the one who was doing all these things, because right now they're seeing like how I do all these things for them. And also when I go away, then they get to value all the things that I do so seamlessly.
Yes.
Right. And it's not even the things that I do as much as the way I make them feel.
Yeah.
Right. Cause they don't feel that same way when I'm not there. They feel other things and, you know, it's not a problem, but what they feel safety and comfort with me is so unique.
Yes.
And I want for them to see that, you know, and see that difference. And the other thing is, you know, if you have little girls, like, and I've always wanted a little girl, it didn't happen, you know, it's okay, I'm over it. I just get myself ready now. But to be an example, right? To be an example, yes, to them. And I think that we are doing much better by kind of setting the stage for both of them, right? Like on both, yeah, sides. And what is the benefit to my kids when I do these things? I tell them explicitly, like, hey, mommy is going to work. This is what mommy's work looks like. And when mommy goes to work, we get to do things, right? So we went to Turks and Caicos, I think it was like 3 years ago, and not Turks and Caicos, St. Thomas. And I paid for, nice, like a lot of the stuff, right?
Yes.
Not their cardiologist dad, but he paid for like the flight to go there. But because I was going to, you know, work from there, I was going to write things off. And I told them, I said, mommy's coaching work paid for you guys to be in, yeah, the turquoise water for 8 hours a day.
Yes.
Right. And so they understand, like, this mom doing this work, there's so many benefits that we get to enjoy. And when mom comes back from a trip, there's so much joy between us. Like, we call ourselves the Three Musketeers.
Yeah.
We're so happy to see each other. And I step away from my phone, I step away from my computer, and I sit with them, and I'm really in bed. We cuddle, and I'm like to close out the day with, what was your sunshine? What was your cloud? What do you want to pray about?
Mm.
Like with each kid separately.
Yes.
And I tell them, like, okay, while I was gone, like, talk to me. Like, how did you feel? You know, what do you want to tell me? Mm-hmm. And then I tell them about my trip and say, this is how I felt. And we all need to fill our buckets. I think in school, you guys are doing a good job about talking about filling your buckets, you know, like with like your own.
We're getting there. We're getting there.
Our school's great.
That's wonderful.
Our school's so good at it.
I'm happy to hear that. It's, yeah, not true in every school, but there is an awareness that has been created after post-COVID, because the emotional tsunami that has hit our schools is significant.
Yeah. Maybe I live in a different neighborhood where it's like more bougie and liberal, but like, I love it because, yeah, they're like, oh, so you have to fill your bucket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it is what I love about what you said about your kids is that you're modeling for them the script or the story that you would like to impart on them, which is more equality between, you know, men and women, moms, yes, and dads, and also like that independence that comes with, it's my job, mm-hmm, to go take care of me. And when you leave your kids and they, maybe they struggle or they're sad, but it's giving them the gift of struggle, mm-hmm, so that they know they can handle their own emotions. They can, right, take care of themselves for that little bit of time that mom's gone. I really see now how maybe past roles as women, we needed to be needed to feel good.
Yeah.
And we, as moms, we needed our kids to need us. And then when they grow up, because I have a 24-year-old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm on the other end here, and I'm noticing, like, excuse me, one thing that I did right was in education, it's called gradual release of responsibility, where it's like the teacher does it first and then we're going to do it together. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to let you have a try at it. I'm still here for you. And then you're going to gradually be independent. I learned that concept as a teacher, and then I applied it as a parent, so that by the time my son was 18, he was pretty independent then, and he's been an independent adult, but still comes back for questions, you know, like, mom, I don't understand this tax thing or insurance thing or whatever, yeah, but it's, I don't need him to need me to feel complete and whole.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't need to feel like he has to make me feel good about me as a parent. right?
That is so good that you did that. I'm like in awe because this is exactly where I want to take my parenting and my relationship with my kids, that they're not dependent on me.
Yes.
Yeah. Because if they're dependent on me, then they can't create that joy, independence for themselves, which how does that feel that you need someone or something outside of you to create that?
Yes. And
we know because we've done it our whole life. So now we're like, oh, we've tasted freedom. We've tasted opportunity, and amazing for the kids, you know, like your clients, my clients, because the ripple effect is then their families, their children, their workplaces, like whoever they influence are all getting a little bit of what we started.
Yes. Because every time, like, and I think that taste that you speak of is awareness. Like you taste the awareness of, oh, it's, there is no amount of emotional reassurance that you can provide to another human on the planet that is going to make them feel better if they think it's your job. And I think one of the uncouplings that we need to do as leaders is we do not have responsibility for people's thoughts, feelings, and actions, right? We can listen to their thoughts. We can have empathy for their emotions and hold space for those emotions. And we can observe and respond to their behaviors, their actions, and decisions. But we didn't make them think a certain way.
Yeah.
We don't control how they feel. And we certainly don't control their behavior. Like that's lesson 101 in leadership is we think it's our job to like fix all the things and control all the people and make them do the things that our bosses want them to do. No, the opposite. We empower them. You know, you have permission to be responsible for your own emotions. Yes, you can have hard conversations with your colleague. I encourage you and facilitate you, but it's not my job to fix two adult conversations, right? Like uncoupling what we think leadership is and how we define it, especially with our the feminine nurturing side of us as women that wants to hold and fix and make everyone feel better and have this amazing culture all of the time. It's stepping back from that and saying, oh, the more I take care of my emotional, mental, and physical needs, I'm modeling that and I'm giving you permission to take back control of your mental, physical, and emotional needs. That's what makes us independent. That's what creates freedom. And I think that is the secret sauce to any leadership position.
That's so good. I mean, we're going to end on that note. I feel like the two of us can have like a series going on with all the things that we want to talk about. We probably will have another
Let's
podcast.
Do it.
I think this is just so good. And it affects all women in all different areas, like in the career, in their relationships, like all the ways. But thank you so much, Angela,
for
for reaching out.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny. Like, okay, we got to tell this story to end this with. So I reached out to Pyle. I'm like, you are such an inspiration to me. I follow her. Of course, she's my good friend. I follow her work. And I was like, ooh, she said something that like resonated with me. And I'm like, I've got to have her on my podcast. So I reached out to her and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Pyle, but I think you thought I was asking, can I be on your podcast?
Yes.
Because then you were like, wait a minute, do you have a podcast? And I was like, girl.
That is funny.
Okay. Today, as we record this, my 300th episode.
Oh my God.
What it's on? Guess the topic. Your emotions are valid.
There you go. Boom. There you go. Boom. That is so funny. Yeah. So I was probably reading your text messages while I was Uber momming. And so I was like, yeah, sure. I think you're like, oh, I want to be in your podcast. And so I think this conversation, yes, is very funny. Guys, there is going to be a part two for sure.
For sure.
This could go on forever. And I'd like to keep the episodes like this length.
Yeah, so no. Keep like short and sweet. It's like commute.
Yes. Commutable podcasting. We're going to term that. But thank you so much, Angela. And if you want to follow her, reach out to her, have any like contact info, like I'm going to put it in the show notes.
Yeah. I'll send you everything.
And then we'll do all the things. Okay. Thanks, Angela.
All right. Thanks, Pyle. So good to see your face.
Hey, if you're finally ready to start being happy, I invite you to join my list. This is where you'll have access to all my workshops, coaching, and pearls. Just head to my website, www.payalghail.com. That's PAYALGHAYAL. And join my list. I can't wait to meet you.